there's two aspects of practice that I'm going to suggest and encourage us to explore, which I introduced last night. Who was here last night? Lots of you, great. Who was not here last night? Okay, you haven't missed anything, and I will refer to it again. So I'm wanting us to look at the hindrance that is the biggie of all the hindrances, that underlies all the hindrances, that hinders our ability to be conscious, awake, aware in any moment. It's because we get confused and hindered. And the big one that underlies all of them is doubt. And so I'm wanting us to explore, each one of you, yourself, your own experiencing of doubting and what that's like and when it shows up and in all the different ways. I'll talk about that more in depth. And then tomorrow, sort of part two, which they're not really separate, but I'm going to focus on it, is the opposite, which is trusting and how to recognize and how to invoke and how to experience more of that so that we can handle the fact that we get so, particularly in these times, as I was talking about last night, we get triggered into anxiety because of the uncertainty of what's happening. You know, that's the latest news, particularly you in this country right now, this, as we all know, get lots of being stirred up. So that's the intention for the weekend. So, doubting. So let's start with this, the hindrances. So we human beings have these amazing minds, and our the whole of all spiritual focus is our inner reality, is what's going on inside ourselves, all of spiritual practices, whatever they are, whatever kinds of traditions they are. So in Buddhism, which is really the only one I'm familiar with, I'm slightly witchy. I do a few little direction things and belong to a group of 13 women who've been meeting every full moon for 25 years. So I do have a slightly other, and I do go to Stone Circle country. When I go to England, where I grew up, you know, so I have some resonance with the earth-based traditions, because I just feel myself drawn to some of those places, the sacred places where people have been, you know, experiencing their inner expansions for generations and generations. So I have some sensitivity to that, but not a lot of learning in it. And I haven't like explored it particularly. I just have that sensitivity. But my knowledge and my experience is in this tradition, and that's it really. I was an Anglican, just for your information. I grew up in England, and so you have to do prayers at school in the morning and that kind of thing. But the Anglicans, in my experience, were the least reverent, and it was really had no meaning. It just was more of a social thing. You went and you had a bonnet on your head at Easter and things like that, and you had to go. But it didn't really have a lot of meaning. And it didn't in our family anyway, and it didn't for me particularly. So I haven't got a religious, you know, area of religious knowledge other than this one. I did practice, as Steve mentioned. I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I just want you to know this about me. Is about 5 years in my 20s, I attempted to be a devotee, unsuccessfully, I'd say, with an Indian guru, a Sikh guru, and I went off to the ashram in India and practiced for, you know, 2.5 hours a day for several years. This is my early practice. So I learned about concentrating, you know, through a mantra and so on. But I didn't fall in love with the guru, which is what it was supposed to be about. I just realized I was not an easy trusting of an particularly authority male figure from another culture, you know. He was a very nice guy, however, but nevertheless. And so it wasn't I realized that's not my path, after which then I became involved with Buddhism. So all that said, all spiritual traditions are attempting to, but particularly Buddhism, have us pay attention to our inner experience, our inner mind and hearts and the state we're in, because it's our inner reality that is actually the wellspring of our well-being. It's not the conditions of our lives. It's not what's going on around us. But we, for survival purposes, believe firmly that in circumstances, if the circumstances are good and the ducks are in a row and, you know, everything's benign and we've got nice people around us, we'll be happy. And if those things are not, we won't be. We are dependent in our survival minds, our little minds, on circumstance. And therefore, we're the victims of it. And so all spiritual practices, whether they're Buddhist or not, are attempting to separate that and protect us, basically, from being victimized by circumstance and being, in fact, able to master our well-being by having our access to our own inner clarity, our own inner truths, our own inner refuges and supports. And the Buddha, that's a huge, you know, basis for the teachings of the Buddha. So we're exploring what's going on inside ourselves, our inner reality, and not just exploring it, but as we explore it, we discover how we screw up all the time, how our little mind stops us from accessing our well-being, which is available to everybody. To access clarity, to access honesty, to access peacefulness, contentment, an open love, to be able to realize we're one with everything. That's available to all of us, but we can't find that root, we can't find that connection often because of this other disturbance that goes on. Our busy little minds get, you know, just disturbing us all the time. And so the disturbances, that's a nice word, I really like that word, disturbances. One of the words the Buddha uses for this are defilements, which is a pretty condemning kind of word. Disturbance is more forgiving, and I know here's a little story, and some of you have heard my stories, but anyway, they're such good ones. So I was in Burma and for a few weeks, about 10 years ago maybe now, and with Saido Tejaniya for a few weeks meditating there. And it was, he's become way more popular in the last number of years, so you know, you never appreciate what you have until later on you realize you were really lucky, you know, because, for instance, there were very few Westerners there at the time, and different nationalities would go with their interpreter to have conversations with him. He didn't give talks. You would just go and he would talk to you about your practice. So his teaching was about your practice and the way to practice rather than sort of theoretical Dharma talks. And so you go and have these interviews with him. And so there were like sometimes five of us, sometimes maybe seven or eight was a lot of us. And we'd be there for like a couple of hours talking. As long as we had things to ask, we would talk to him about every 4 days. So it was a really privileged access. And so he'd be there, and then he had an interpreter there. And she was a younger woman. She was an amazing linguist. She knew many languages. And so you'd speak to her, and she'd speak to him back and forth. And so so one question I had at one point asking him, because he uses the word defilement for when our minds aren't clear, when we aren't able to access our wisdom, you know, our wisdom minds. And whatever you did, you solved it. So well done. You didn't do anything. It's amazing, eh? So be ready. There'll be a crack any second to keep you on your toes. I said to him, the meanings of words mean a lot to me, and I play with words, those who know me, and try and find the right word for myself and what does it mean, and you know, explore my own truth in that way. And so I said, defilements is such a heavy word. And I mentioned this even last night, I think, that the word defilement, was it last night, did I talk about this? Defilement isn't really, we don't use that word very much. It's not really a common in our language. And the only time that I'm aware that it's used is when we use it, like a woman is defiled if she's been raped, you know, or the whole idea of the, you know, the virgin wedding and the white dress, as long as she's not defiled, and that whole very fundamentalist approach to purity and all that. And so it's a very condemning, and that's the association. It's a dreadful association. And so I didn't go through all that. I just said it's just, in our common usage, it's such a horrible word. And so the story is so extraordinary, was the interpreter didn't even bother to interpret the question. She didn't take the time to speak in Burmese and him to speak back to her and her speak to me. She answered straight to me, which really is not her role, but at the same time, she's a very wise woman, beautiful. And she just was like, no, 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 she said, you don't want them in your mind, like that. These disgusting states, it's just like, so she knew, like, she didn't need to ask about them. And the reason that he uses the word defilements, because these disturbances really, really hinder our beauty, our who we really are. I was going to use the word glory, that's a very religious sort of a word, but the gloriousness of being able to be awake. And anything that's in the way of that is just, you don't want it. You don't want it. So you can use coverings. We use coverings. We use hindrances. The Buddha used that. That's an interpretation of nivarana as a Pali word. To have the clarity of the possible potential for this human mind to be really clear, really present, really open, really connected, really caring, really calm, really content. All of the qualities of an awakened state, which we all know and have and access, gets distorted, gets disturbed, gets covered, gets hindered by these hindrances. So there are these five hindrances. And it's really a great practice to explore them for yourself and recognize whenever they're disturbing you, when you're being disturbed. A sweet thing, I think, so it helps you not... Okay. Another teaching of the Buddha, very clever. These are so clever, they're so brilliant, is the double dart theory. There's a dart of being upset by something that's painful. Whatever the thing is, something happens, it hurts, ouch, that's a dart. And then what we do is we add a whole lot more darts on top of that first dart because we go like, oh no, this is terrible, this thing has happened, and what's going to, I'm never going to be able to get out of it. And we proliferate like crazy and add way more suffering on top of the original suffering. And so proliferation, papancha. So what stops the doing of that, now I've got to go back to what was the first thing I was saying. Wait a second, because I got off on that one. I knew it would happen. I was hesitating whether I should do that, because I thought I'd lose my original track. Anybody help me with my original track? Steve, are you paying attention? Nivarana is the hindrances. It doesn't matter, because it's all the Dharma, but I think I'll just continue with the Nivarana. Okay, so these hindrances... Wait a second, let me decide how I'm going to approach it. Am I being videoed? I want to get to doubt. That's the whole thing we're going through here. Okay, so these coverings, these hindrances, these disturbances... We want to be able to recognize them in ourselves. Once we recognize, oh yeah, that's why we want to practice with them. Oh yeah, I'm wanting something. That's right. The Buddha called them visiting forces. And when you think of them as visiting forces, this is what I was saying, it's a sweet way he approached it. It's not your fault. You haven't done anything wrong. It's not like, oh, I've lost it again. I shouldn't have. And you know, where it's so easy then to add the extra doubt of blame yourself for being hindered. It's a visiting force. It is what happens to the human mind. Every human mind gets visited by these confusions, these disturbances, because we believe in external circumstances being for our well-being, and so we have to rearrange them and manipulate them and fix them and get rid of them. So, of course, we then have to deal with them. So that's what the disturbance is about, trying to make it be nice, to make ourselves be okay. That's why the mind gets going. And when the mind gets going, that sense of me fixing things happens, and that sense of me is stressful. I'm in a sunset moment, there's no sense of me, there's no stress, there's no needing to fix the sunset, it's fine as it is. So that whole activating disturbance, hindrance, attack isn't happening. When we can recognize that we get visited by these hindrances, they are visiting forces. It's not like I lost it, I did anything wrong. It diminishes the tendency then to add the extra darts of self-blame, you know, frustration, and criticism and all of that. Okay, so these visiting forces, wanting something other than what is, the opposite, wishing it were not this way, they're often together. You don't want what is and you want the other thing. Good example. So the wanting or the not wanting, the warmth towards, the desire for, and the resistance or the ill will towards, or negativity and so on, aversion, flip sides often together, agitation, restlessness, worry, squirminess, not quite ability to be here, can't stand being here, unsettledness, we all know these very well. Its opposite, which isn't there, a flip side of it, it's the opposite, so you can't have both of these, is that sense of dull, sinking, like checking out, missing completely, shutting down, heavy, sloggy, depressed, all of those kind of sloth and torpor. I don't know why it's so great to say sloth and torpor. I love saying it, but we don't use that language, but it's a, sloths move very slowly. Anybody knows a sloth, if you've ever seen a sloth, they've seen a sloth on a holiday in a river, on a river rafting trip in Costa Rica, and it was apparently, it was just climbing up out of having fallen in the water, according to the guides. It was dripping wet, climbing up a branch extremely slowly. And he said, he's really rushing. Apparently they come down out of the tree once in 6 weeks to pee and poop. So like mating is really a very, you know, very rare occurrence because it's, you know, they don't move very fast. Sloth and torpor. And then the fifth one is doubt. And so this is what the one I want us to explore. I want you all to get really familiar with these visiting forces. If you're really alert to them and aware of them, then you've made them conscious. The thing is, these disturbances in our mind are happening all the time, but they're so under the radar, we're so normalized about it that we don't realize that we're causing ourselves distress. We're causing ourselves dissatisfaction. We're causing ourselves anxiety. We're exhausting ourselves, and usually in vain, unfortunately. Because we're so busy trying to get the ducks in a row and trying to rearrange circumstances, which is futile a lot of the time, and we can temporarily get it all the ducks in a row, and then one of the ducks falls off the edge of the row. It's like, ugh. So this endless trying, that's why it's in vain. And we're never going to be able to make it all what we think of as nice, because this is the human realm of the eight vicissitudes, where it's half the time pleasant, half the time unpleasant, and somewhere in between. And that's also visiting forces beyond our control. So endlessly trying to make it right, you know, make it good, is ridiculous. When you think about it, it's ridiculous. But we do it, and we do it, and we do it. So we need to get to know these and get familiar with how they're operating. And it's not personal. They're just the way the human mind is trying to make you happy. Thank you very much, trying to make me happy, this little mind, trying to get my ducks in a row. It's my friend. I call my busy little mind my executive assistant. And she works, she's really efficient, you know, she's great, she works really hard. And I have a friend, a colleague, who just says, she talks to her executive assistant. She just pats her on the head every once in a while and says, thank you very much. We've got it covered. Because the wise part doesn't need that. It doesn't need that help. We don't need to get the ducks in a row to be happy. It's inside here. We don't need to do all that. If we can attend to our inner reality, that's very weird. I don't think there's anything I can do about it. Okay, so the reason that doubting, it's the biggest of these hindrances, because it's underneath when there's anything else there. If we are wanting something, this obviously isn't enough. We don't really trust this, whatever this is. We want something else, it'll be better. This isn't okay. This isn't reliable enough. We can't be with this. We want something better or other or different. If we don't like something, we're aversive to something. It's not just that we don't like it. We don't think that it's okay to have it. We don't think we'll be okay if we have to be with it. We don't trust the okayness of the situation, so we have aversion. See what I'm saying? It's in underneath there. When you're restless, when there's that sense of squirminess and agitation, it's not just your squirmy and agitation. You can't settle with whatever's going on. You're squirmy. It's not okay. You can't be with this okay. You don't trust that you're going to be able to do it. You can't surrender to something when you're agitated and restless. So that trusting isn't there, which means you're doubting something. Even when you're dull, usually the thing about being dull, sloth and torpor, dullness, is that you're not engaged in your life. It's like it's not worth your attention. And so you're drifting off. So when we trust something, we're engaged with it. This is our life. We honor it. We respect it. We're here for it. If we don't, it's not worth our attention. So we don't really trust the thing as a worthwhile thing to pay attention to. So we get dull. You can see it's in there. It's in there underneath everything. You don't trust people. When you don't trust a person, you're protecting yourself. That sense of you needs to be guarded. Maybe they should or shouldn't be listened to. Maybe what they're saying is right or wrong. And that brings up guardedness and judgment and criticism and all of that, when you don't trust, you know, you hear, you don't know what the diagnosis is going to be, or there's a situation you're going to have to deal with, and you're like worried about it, is because you don't trust that you're going to be able to cope with it. You don't know how you're going to deal with it. You don't know if dealing with it will be manageable and you'll be okay. And you don't trust it if you won't be okay, because you don't think that you're going to survive not being okay. You want to be happy. It's underneath all of the anxiety, all of the activity of the mind, all of the disturbances it's being driven by. Can you see that? And that's what I want you to get to recognize. It's actually, don't be daunted by it, because when you start really looking and you start getting familiar with it, you realize it's like all the time being activated. And what you get to see, and this is what I want you to get to see eventually, is what I get to explore, because I just was fascinated by this topic and made it really in my consciousness for a year. I was saying that last night. I mean, I didn't just say, okay, that's it, I'm not going to notice it anymore after a year. But I did give, I just made it be a thing that was, I was just really interested in checking out a lot of my, in my life, and realized, it's a long time, just how constant it is. And not just that it's really, really constant, but the thing that I explored and found and want you to see for yourselves is that any moment in my consciousness where I was self-conscious, where there was this sense of being separate, I don't like that, the sunset moments, there's no self-consciousness, that's why I use that word sunset, rainbow moments, you know, chocolate moments for some of us, you know. singing in a choir moments, there are moments, you know, where we get elevated beyond that self-concern. Any moment that had that self-concern in it, I use the term SOS, save our souls, it's a separate sense of self moment. There's some degree of like, there is doubt. In fact, I went as far as realizing doubt makes me. No doubt, no me. It's that huge. It's that significant. And along with the me is the wanting, is the resisting, is the judging, is the comparing, is the trying, is the exhaustion, is all of that. Anything. So whenever we're not in that moment of clear awareness, awakened state, which we have many of, which we dismiss, we don't even notice them. They're irrelevant moments. We're so triggered by circumstance and the pleasant things and the unpleasant things. That's where all our attention goes. I just lost the thread of that sentence again. Thank goodness I'm not on the video. Doesn't matter, you got my drift, you know what I was saying? I know I'm talking about doubting, like, I'll see what my notes say, they'll help me. Yeah. When we are not in those moments, clarity, there's many descriptions for that. Disturbed, hindered, spinning, caught in thinking, lost, involved. Utejaniya uses the word, when you get involved, something's happening, comes into your consciousness, and then, oh, you get involved in it. It catches your attention, and you start proliferating around the thing. One of the phrases I use is, you go down a rabbit hole. That's what it's like for me. It's sort of like a tunnel, that there's something's going on, and suddenly I'm all engaged in that thing, losing my open awareness, losing perspective, losing any other thing that's going on, losing a sense of my body as being here, losing awareness of how I'm feeling about something, and I'm being now consumed by whatever the situation is that now has caught my thinking up. Steve Armstrong uses the words entangled. You know, Utejaniya says, we don't want to. It's like, he said, we're walking down the road, and it's a bazaar, not a bizarre road, but a bazaar, you know, with stalls and shows and side things and, you know, tea shops, and he's Indian, right? I mean, he's at Burmese, but Europe, Asian bazaar. But you don't want to go into any of the sideshows. You want to keep walking on the road and see them and know they're there, but not get pulled off your path. So that's another way of describing any of these states that pull us away from our awakened state. So, hindrance. We want to recognize ourselves doing that. We want to be present, aware, simple. It's simple. sunset moments, chocolate moments are simple, available, happen all day long. And then we get pulled into something. And that's what you want to see. But what I'm wanting you today to do is see when that happens. If you're fully in something, you won't be able to see that you're in it. What happens when you get entangled or down a rabbit hole or whatever the word is, lost? What's lost? You're not lost. Your attention is completely there, but your awareness is lost. So Utejani again talks about two minds. There's the mind that's the executive assistant, left brain, busy trying to organize, get rid of mind. And then there's behind it, awareness of that. The knowing that that's what's happening. The big mind. The free mind. The clear awareness. Pure. Undisturbed. When we're consumed in whatever the thinking is, we lose that. And then when we come back again to a present awareness and reality, there it is, and I know I'm present again. I didn't know I was lost, but I do know that I'm now present. That knowing, that's mindfulness, that's sati, that's what the whole point of practice is, to be able to have access to that big awareness. Because when that's functioning, we've got it covered. We don't need to worry about all of the thinking. We still will think and make plans. It's not that we don't function, but we don't get consumed and lost in that. That reality. Maybe it's every time I blink.
We need to switch out the whole table.
Let's just put up with it. Keeps us awake. It's not that bad. It's tolerable, isn't it? It's not pleasant, but that's life, right? Okay. If it gets worse, we'll see if we can handle it. Okay. Okay. So now, as you explore these hindrances, particularly the big E, doubt, that's underneath that, I'm wanting how we recognize it, not how we recognize. When you recognize, oh yeah, I'm actually doubting something, we don't look for it all. In this retreat, I'm not going to have you all the time busily trying to check out doubt all the time. But whenever you've been pulled away from present awareness, you will not realize it, usually, until you're just after that moment and suddenly you realize you were just pulled away. If that happens a lot, if something that keeps repeating or is very sticky for you and gets, you know, is bugging you a lot, is seducing you away a lot, is consuming your attention frequently, when that happens in the moment that you're present again, then check, is doubting, you know, can I recognize doubting in there? And how do I know it? Because as I said last night, those of you here, how our systems learn to become free is by experiencing, in this case, doubting, experiencing tension, experiencing narrowing, experiencing involvement and busyness or churningness or whatever the energy is, dukkha, in other words, dukkha, suffering, struggling, whatever form it's showing up in you. When you experience yourself, separate sense of me, got to do something about, don't know what to do, and doubting has got this, often it's like, I don't know what to do, sort of like, I should do something, and I don't know what it's to be, and it's a hesitancy, and an uncertainty, and a squirminess. Recognizing, by experiencing how that actually manifests energetically inside yourself, recognize that. And those of you who've got more experience with your meditation, in other words, whose minds are able to be stably present and to keep observing. You don't just notice it. You can't notice it is wonderful. Experience it as best in your body is the idea. But keep on there doing that. Stay with your attention there and see what happens. Because what will happen sooner or later, sometimes instantly, is being gripped by doubting, once it's seen, loses its grip. We begin to realize, oh, doubting's happening. Because suddenly the second part of the mind, the big part of the mind, is now functioning, recognizing doubting. So your two minds. Now there's doubting in the little bit of the mind, and there's the big mind going, oh, doubting's happening. Well, that's not doubting. It's knowing. It's awareness. Awareness is just awareness. Awareness of doubting. And when that happens, the doubting starts to get thinner and less, because it's not gripped you, because you're not now consumed in it, because you're freed from it and observing it. Keep observing it if you can stay present. And it will disappear. It will fade, thin out, turn to something else, be gone. Sooner or later, it always happens. And if you can stay with attention to your present experience, watching the doubting disappear from your body, from the way you're holding, from the way you're gripping your teeth or whatever it is, squirmy, it will leave you in peace. And you'll stay present without doubt then. Present awareness is always stable. When we can access it with our attention, we can see these visiting forces visiting and being what they are and doing what they do and feeling as they do and experiencing the grip of it and the subsiding of the grip and then the release. The release, sorry Barb. The release of that grip. If somebody jumps with this sound, we'll start trying to do something. I can hold the mic. I'm just about finished talking anyway, so. Okay, great, perfect, thank you. So, staying present and observing the visiting and leaving. Once we experience the leaving, it's gone, and staying present, this is vital when we can do this. You're then present and aware, and there is sorry. Once we can experience the presence and then the absence of any defilement, any disturbance, any dukkha-ing, we really learn by then experiencing, because you're not just observing, you're experiencing because you're present in your body, in your energy body, what it is to be free of that particular defilement. When you're in moments, even if it's just for a moment, no doubting, you'll be able to recognize the next moment of doubting much more easily. But when you're in something, it's hard to recognize it, right? When you're in the fish, when you're the fish in the ocean, you don't realize you're in the ocean. But once you're on the deck, apparently, I've never done this, you think, oh, where's that ocean? You know, it's really different now. When we have something that's a contrasting state, we'll actually recognize that state much more easily. So from the consciousness of peacefulness, awareness, doubt has disappeared and left me, you'll really recognize it when it's here again. But until you have that space from it, it's hard to recognize because it's so normal, because it's so constant, so frequent. That's what I'm wanting us to do this weekend. And then tomorrow I'm going to add some of the ways to help mitigate it, which is trusting, which isn't different, because you'll see for yourself in the moment that doubt does disappear, as soon as it's recognized, it lessens. There's a sense of like, I can handle this, you know, whatever the thing is. This doesn't have to lead me into great anxiety and wonder what on earth's going to happen, you know, tomorrow. I'll deal with it. And suddenly there's a sense of confidence in the absence of doubt. The trusting is the absence of doubt, and you will discover it by observing your doubt disappearing. But the point is to experience, experienced by the wise, as the Buddha taught. Experience for yourself the arriving, gripping, subsiding and passing by being present and aware. So we need our mindfulness to be able to do, that's what does the seeing. That's what's able to observe it. No mindfulness, you'll just be doubting, not doubting, doubting, not doubting, and you can't do anything about it. We want mastery over these disturbances. That's the developing of meditation. All right? Questions? Anything not clear about my... is so basic to freedom and inhibiting freedom that it's so worthwhile getting familiar with it and seeing it for yourself. It's so worthwhile. It's so huge. It's so neat, I think. And so let me just emphasize, don't take it personally. It's a visiting force that happens to human minds. Your mind is like everybody else's mind. And so that's what, when it's activated, when we're activated, we're caught up, it's going to be there. And don't blame yourself. Don't worry about it. Your mind is doing all it can to help you be happy, thinking that this will help. Thank you very much. You've got it covered. Please. Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you. I'm so glad you... So I have to hold this just like this. Technology, oh my God. The reason the doubt is such a significantly important thing is it's ever present. I mean, it's so much part of the other ones to explore that. But it's so difficult to recognize because it's so commonplace, but also because it's convincingly reliable, we think. Like, we think that it's sensible. We think that it's wise to actually have doubt. And a certain amount of that is true, because to have no doubt at all is, you know, be utterly confident and trust absolutely everything and every situation, it'll all be fine. You're going to, you know, that's the fool in the tarot cards, right? Just tripping along, about to fall off a cliff because everything's fine, you know. That's actually ignorance. So a certain amount of caution and discriminating is required to navigate the terrain of being a human being. But when doubt gets of our ding out and then coming in again, it's interesting. I need a whole new electronic system. No. So all the hindrances aren't per se hindrances. Wanting something isn't a hindrance. When we want friendliness, we want honesty, we want clarity, we want our big minds. Da da da. Are we here? We're here and there. Must be meaning I've got to stop talking pretty quick. the same for aversion. We need a certain discriminating. Like, I don't like this. I don't like this food. I'm not going to be around, you know, people who are fighting and arguing and being mean to each other. We do things, and that's appropriate. It's to have that. A certain level of restlessness and energy so that we're not just asleep all day long is a good thing. And a certain sense of peacefulness and ease and, you know, laid backness for the nervous. Helpful. But when they become consuming, when they become running us, when we are in the grip of them and we have no perspective, we have no big view, we are now consumed in wanting or consumed with our aversion. We're just so restless we can't stand it. Would she please stop talking another second, you know? Or, you know, we're just passing out with dullness. Or we're like, I don't know. We're totally don't know how to move next because we're doubting, we're hesitant, we're just so not sure. Then we are being run by that hindrance. Then it's become a hindrance. It's disturbing us. It isn't just a faculty that's useful. It's now in the way of our ability to see beyond. So that is a very, and that's very subtle sometimes. So none of this is we sort of get it absolutely right. Don't try and think, okay, I'm going to get this completely together. This is an exploration. This is about learning the territory inside ourselves, which is always shifting. It's like a river of energy. And so sometimes it's clearer, brighter, more open. Sometimes it's thicker, more dense, and more aggressive, and so on. We're just wanting to navigate our inner reality and get to know it. And we will have moments of great clarity, we'll have moments of medium clarity, we'll have moments with no clarity at all. So it's not that we're trying to get it right and then that's it, game over. Liberated forever. That's not how it works. There are moments where we actually are less hindered, and there are moments when we are not hindered at all. For instance, deep meditation, concentrated states, no hindrances. Can be for hours. You can have, you know, absorbed jhanic states for hours, no hindrances at all. Then you come out of your meditation and then you want it to come back and then you're definitely hindered again, and so on. So it's this dance that's always happening. So we're just learning. And by the seeing of the functioning of it, we see how the mind works inside and how it grips us and releases us and so on. Then we get closer to not being unaware and caught, because we become more aware of it. And then we become freer and freer. And then in a moment we get gripped, it falls away really fast. When we don't recognize it, we're in something for days and we have no idea that we're just fully depressed or fully anxious or fully, you know, full of resentment and we're running around like pig pen, you know. But as we become more conscious, that's what meditation is doing. These forces come, but they visit and they slide through quickly and they don't pull us around so much. We get freer and freer like that. So it's a process. It's not a fixed thing that we get right. Just get to know yourself. And it's not yourself exactly, it's just the humanness of how your mind works. So that's the point of what we're doing. All right? Any other questions? Thank you for that one. That's a great one. Okay.